Hey, once again, Jerry Pippin is appearing here to review a book. This time the book is Cruel and Shocking Act, The Secret History of the Kennedy Assassination by a former New York Times journalist named Phil Sheehan. Phil Sheehan was also interviewed by Bob Schieffer, and there was a panel discussion that included Tom Johnson, who was with the Dallas Tribune, and he also was an editor at the Los Angeles Times, and later at CNN. Now he's obviously retired, but the book, Sheehan recalls what the Warren Commission did, what the Warren Commission did not do, what the various interactions between the staff and Chief Justice Earl Warren. Justice Warren had been the former governor of California, and of course, the Chief Justice at the time. And now we'll go to Jerry for his comments on the book and on the interview done on Face the Nation earlier today.
The interview, which you'll hear in a little bit, is very, very interesting and revealing. And I'm inclined to agree with Bob Schieffer, and he'll be on here after me discussing this in detail. But we have changed our attitude over the last 50 years about commissions. It appears now that the Warren Commission had some people who were very, very well respected on both sides of the aisle, so to speak, liberal and conservative, but yet they never really got to legislate or report or say anything in detail about many aspects of the Kennedy assassination. Because why? They weren't told. Now, Sheehan wrote a book on 9/11. As well, and that commission, and there's a lot of the same things that went on with the Warren Commission. It's almost the same playbook with 9/11 Commission. In fact, several people, including former Senator Bob Kerry, walked off of the commission. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. And pretty soon, people were beginning to catch on after the Warren Commission. It took probably 2 decades before we begin to wonder about these things. And this is very, very similar to what we have going on today. It shows that the secret ops, the black agencies of America, I'm talking about CIA, NSA, even the FBI, have been able to work almost as it was stated by automatic pilot. They go after people. They don't ask any questions. They keep it a secret. The things are revealed. They try to prosecute the whistleblowers. This has been going on for 50 years. When will the American public catch on? I submit that they're beginning to catch on now. And these books, these two books, actually Sheehan's and Larry Sabatow's, are a little more sophisticated than some of the other books who push the establishment or the Warren Commission conclusion that Oswald did it beyond a doubt. He was only one involved, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they've got a little more sophisticated now in these books. First is sort of with Professor Sabatow's book. He spent 600 pages talking about a 50-year-old dictaphone belt, which nobody could understand, trying to insinuate. In fact, he doesn't insinuate. He says that the motorcycle cop who had the mic open was 2 miles from the scene. Well, that's not really true. And most people who watch their own television can tell you that. And if you get a chance to look at the video these days, you'll see that's also what's happening. That there's more than one motorcycle there, and the motorcycle cop that's supposed to be missing, well, he's there. And they're all on the way to Parkland Hospital with what was probably a dead John F. Kennedy, the president, being shot in the head. And this book here is a little more sophisticated, even more than Sabatow's. He lays out some evidence that is true and that we didn't know about, or if we did know about it, nobody was talking about it. And Tom Johnson of CNN, the Dallas Times Herald, the LA Times, a respected publisher and executive, who had a strong journalist background and actually, tried to follow these stories up. And he did it in a way which most people don't do. And that is, you get the head of the company, you go to the head of the agency. And the head of the agency is much more likely to spill the beans or at least talk to you if you have that stature. And this is one thing that maybe people haven't realized, but the pecking order, so to speak, is very, very strong, not only in corporate America, but also in the United States government and how it works. And the interesting thing is that many of the people at the top of the heap, when you follow things like in the Warren Commission, well, they never were given the real facts. And basically, it doesn't take very much a genius to figure out that, the best way to cover up something is put a plant in there, somebody who will obfuscate the evidence or put out a contrary theory and then back it up with some evidence, real or fake. And that's what we've seen for 50 years now. And we're seeing it today. America has become a victim of its own secrecy, and it has given too much, in my opinion, power to people who were not elected, never will be elected, and who in many ways are incompetent and are following a playbook that was written years ago that if they're guilty and you can't get them by a trial, kill them. And that's, a very unpleasant thing to say about America, land of the brave, home of the beautiful, is that we're also home of Murder Incorporated. I hate to be that blunt about it, but that's what's happened. And it's happened in my, estimation now. Unfortunately, a man who I supported for president, and I still support him, I think has bitten into the secrecy apples and believes that either A, that's the only way to operate, or B, it tastes pretty good, and he's going to follow it. So it's a lesson that people who are really, really dedicated can be corrupted by the fear that is created by these secret agencies. And we're going to watch this. We've got to do something to correct it. And unfortunately, I don't see much demand from the grassroots at this time. We seem to be content to let others do it and others protect us, and regardless of what cost, as long as we don't have to look at it. Now, we do have a step or two of something that might break, and a lot of people don't have much hope, but I feel that they probably overstepped their bounds this time when they started listening to phone calls of leaders of the free world, leaders who are our friends, leaders who have done the beckon and call of the United States and basically returned them. That's my opinion.
There are not many of us left who covered the assassination of John Kennedy, but only those of us who were alive before that awful weekend can really know how much it changed America. We had been a confident nation. We had won World War II. We believed in our leaders. We came to see our presidents as all but invincible. Because of television, we had come to know John Kennedy and his family more intimately than any of his predecessors. Then, in a matter of seconds, he was killed by a madman. As the entire nation watched in horror and shock as the events of the weekend unfolded on television in real time, the first time that had ever happened, our national confidence was shaken to the core. That weekend began one of the most violent decades in our country's history. More assassinations, Vietnam, the beginnings of Watergate, a time that Americans came to question almost everything we had once taken for granted. As it always had, the nation rebounded from those dark days, but it was never quite the same. It was the weekend America lost its innocence. Back in a minute. Oswald went to Mexico City in the weeks before the assassination. The Warren Commission concluded the trip didn't figure in the killing of President Kennedy. But this man thought otherwise. He is Winston Scott, seen here in a 1962 home movie taken in Mexico City, where he was the CIA station chief. Though he and others told the commission that the CIA had limited knowledge of Oswald's visit, he later wrote that he knew and suspected much more. When he died in 1971, a top CIA official flew to Mexico City and removed several boxes of documents from Scott's house. One of those documents, quietly declassified in the mid-1990s, was a section of Scott's unpublished memoirs, a section devoted to Oswald's trip to Mexico. Lee Harvey Oswald became a person of great interest to us, wrote Scott. Oswald's visits at both the Communist Cuban Embassy and the Soviet Embassy in Mexico City during his brief five-day stay in September-October 1963 are, together with what is known of what took place during these visits, sufficient to make him a suspect agent acting on behalf of the Soviets in several things, possibly including the assassination of President Kennedy. So I have to ask you, Phil, is Winston Scott and what he wrote in this diary to be taken seriously? Was that conjecture on his part? Do we have any information that he might have had evidence to back that up?
Well, apparently, in his memoirs, he describes photographs, CIA photographs, that were taken of Oswald in Mexico City. And he describes tapes of wiretap conversations in which Oswald was involved. And all of that disappeared. Certainly none of that material was ever provided to the Warren Commission.
Was he the one that came up with the story about that Oswald actually had some sort of a relationship with a woman, a Cuban woman in Mexico City? That was new to me when I read your book.
There is some evidence to suggest he had a brief relationship with a young Mexican woman who worked at the Cuban embassy in Mexico City. The Warren Commission actually wanted to interview that woman, but Chief Justice Warren made the decision she would not be interviewed because he said she was a communist and we don't interview communists.
But this information was not passed on to the Warren Commission and was not passed on to the agents in Dallas in those days before President Kennedy came to Dallas.
Absolutely. And Winscott told the Warren Commission that he did not believe there was a conspiracy. And apparently in his memoirs he says exactly the opposite.
So he deliberately, for whatever the reasons, didn't shoot straight with the Warren Commission.
I think that's very clear.
You know, there was another incident, one uncovered years later by Tom Johnson, who had worked for President Johnson in the White House, was his press secretary as he left the White House, and in the 1970s was the publisher of the Dallas Times-Herald and later then the head of CNN. We want to bring Tom in now. He's with us this morning. Tell us what you discovered. When was it, 1975, about some information that you came to know about?
Bob, it was 1975. I was sitting by an agent of the FBI that I had come to know over time. We were talking about the Warren Commission. We were talking about whether there had been any new information that had been discovered. He told me that Oswald had come to the Dallas office of the FBI, had left a threatening note several days before the assassination, and that note had been flushed, that is to say, had been destroyed.
How did that come about? What did you find out about how the note came to be destroyed? And do you know what was on the note?
I did not know precisely what was on the note. The work that I did, with a great deal of cooperation, incidentally, from then FBI Director Clarence Kelly, showed that the note had been a threatening note, threatening to blow up the Dallas office of the FBI, the building, if the agents did not cease trying to interview Oswald's wife, Marina.
And we know, of course, that they had been in contact with both Marina and with Lee Harvey Oswald because he had defected to the Soviet Union, and she was, of course, a Russian national.
Yes, and the fact that she spoke no English at the time, and agents Hostey and Howe were showing up at the residence to try to interview her as a matter of some routine for those citizens of Russia who were living in the United States. But she was terribly frightened and thought perhaps that these men were even KGB.
And you were not about to publish something like this, though. You checked it out. So if I remember, you flew to Washington and met with the then head of the FBI, Clarence Kelly.
I had heard so many rumors over the years so many conspiracy theories. And here I was as the publisher of the Dallas paper that I felt this information had to be checked every possible way. So I asked for an emergency meeting with the then FBI Director Clarence Kelly. He and Assistant Director James Adams agreed to see me the following day. I flew to Washington and I described to them what I had learned. I also asked them to confirm it or deny it for me with one condition, that they would advise me of their findings and that we could then go forward with publication if it was true.
And they later told you it was.
And on a Saturday morning in September of 1975, Director Kelly called me to say that it was true. He was very saddened, I think, to learn of it, and we went forward with the publication.
And Phil, I'm going to get back to your book. As far as you know, this information never got to the Warren.
No, absolutely not. I mean, the decision was made 2 days after the assassination to destroy this note. And in truth, we'll never know exactly what was in that note. And it's been described in different ways. But no, the Warren Commission knew absolutely nothing about it.
You know, one of the most fascinating parts of your book to me, because I've worked in Washington for more than 40 years now, and I know how hard it is to keep a secret around here. I mean, you can barely keep one through a 24-hour news cycle, but you reveal something, a secret that is held for 50 years, and that is that an investigator on the Warren Commission actually interviewed Fidel Castro. Never made a record of it, but tell us how that happened.
Well, this is a gentleman by the name of William Coleman, who was then a young lawyer from Philadelphia who's on the staff of the Warren Commission.
And who went on to become Secretary of Transportation in the Ford administration.
That's correct. And he's in charge of the conspiracy team on the Warren Commission. And he actually knows Fidel Castro from his days in jazz clubs in Harlem, and apparently during his visits to New York, Castro would visit. And Coleman, is sent out on a boat to the waters off Cuba, very secretly, to meet with Fidel Castro to hear what Castro has to say, which is that he insists that he did not have any involvement in President Kennedy's assassination.
You know, Tom, Lyndon Johnson never accepted the Warren Commission report that there was no conspiracy. He told Joe Califano, one of his senior aides, others in the administration, the Kennedys were trying to get Castro, and Castro got him first. Did he ever have any evidence of that, or was that just a suspicion that he had?
To the best of my knowledge, former President Johnson, never had any hard evidence of that.
And Phil, did you ever find anything to indicate that Castro did indeed have this connection? We know when Oswald went to the Cuban embassy in Mexico, right, he tried to get a visa to go to Cuba, but the Cubans wouldn't give him one. My sense was that they turned him away. They didn't want to deal with him.
That's apparently correct, or at least that is the story we were told at the time. But, you know, in Mexico City, Oswald is dealing with Cuban spies and Soviet spies and Mexicans sympathetic to Castro who might have had reason to want to see the end of John Kennedy's presidency. And all of those connections went really uninvestigated by the FBI and the CIA. They didn't want to find out what the truth was down there.
Tom, you interviewed Castro yourself many years after that when you were with, the LA Times?
I was then with CNN.
With CNN, yes. By that time.
Yes.
Did you ever get any sense that there was a Castro connection here?
President Castro said to me and my international editor, Eason Jordan, and our deputy international editor, Larry Register, that under no conditions did anybody in his government have any connection with the assassination. And I'll never forget his quote as translated to me. He said, if there were ever any evidence, they would have incinerated my little island.
Phil, in your book, you talk about, and there's no question about this, I mean, there's been, reports about it since. There's no question that the administration before that was trying to sabotage Castro in every way they could. They were trying to topple him. The Bay of Pigs had been, a complete failure. But right up until the assassination, the CIA was still trying to carry out some sort of a move to assassinate Castro.
They were trying to kill him. And on the day of President Kennedy's assassination, a CIA officer in Paris is handing a poison pen to a man who's apparently assigned to kill Castro. No, the Kennedy administration was very clearly trying to oust Castro, and almost certainly violently.
And, you know, from time to time came up with these various plots, bring in the mafia to see if they could help and that sort of thing. Castro had to know about that.
He did. He did know about it. In fact, just weeks before the assassination, Castro gave an interview in Havana in which he said he was aware that the Kennedy administration was trying to kill him, and, you know, there would be retaliation if that continued.
But apparently, as Tom Johnson came away from it believing, he thought that it would the consequences would be disastrous for Cuba if he did try something. I mean, we'll never know. Obviously, he's going to deny it, but we'll never know any more than that. We'll be back in 1 minute. We're going to bring in Peggy Noonan and Bob Woodward into this. And we're back now. Joining us at the table, Peggy Noonan, columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and Bob Woodward, our old friend at the Washington Post. Peggy, as you sit here and listen to Phil retell this story and Tom, what goes through your mind here?
Well, it's a heck of a story. We are 50 years, we are half a century into this story, and we are still learning new things about it, which is kind of amazing. But I also wondered, as I mentioned a moment ago, I wonder if we were not, as a fully functioning nation, lucky not to know all of this at the time. You wonder how destabilizing it would have been to have known of the grave doubts and the mischief and, in some cases, the dishonesty of people who were running the United States and who were running the great report of the tragically killed president. So in a way, I mean, it's the opposite of these days where we know everything, and that has its own destabilizing
effect.
Well,
you know, Phil writes in his book that at one point Dean Rusk told the... who did he tell? The attorney general or somebody that shut down this investigation about trying to find out if it was Castro?
Well, it's an amazing story, but the U.S. ambassador to Mexico City, a fellow by the name of Tom Mann, says many years after the assassination that he was called immediately after President Kennedy's murder by Secretary of State Dean Rusk and told to shut down any investigation in Mexico City that might point to Cuban involvement in the assassination. And he thought he was shocked by that. He said he thought the same order had been given to the CIA and FBI offices in Mexico City, and he thought that was because the CIA was terribly concerned that its covert operations in Mexico might be revealed.
What is so interesting, Bob Woodward, and you know, you and I have been here and seen a lot of these things.
Too much.
that how the first thing that agencies tend to do is trying to make sure they can't be blamed for something. And clearly, that is why the FBI and the CIA did not come clean with the Warren Commission, and why maybe they didn't even tell the agents in Dallas what was going on.
Well, initially in the Watergate cover-up, part of the argument was, oh, you'll expose covert operations in Mexico because they were laundering $89,000 of money that helped finance Watergate. I think there's a theme here in all of this that you have laid out that connects somewhat to what's going on now, and that is the power of this secret world, CIA, FBI, particularly in what you've looked at, Phil, the assassination plots against Castro. I mean, it's stunning, and this information really didn't get to the Warren Commission. And it's not saying that Castro did it, but that there's all this secrecy, and the people at the top or the people investigating the commission does not get the evidence. We look now at what's going on with all the NSA wiretapping and people saying, well, they didn't know or they did know. It clearly is much more extensive than people expected. You connect this with the drone strikes in Pakistan and Yemen, which is our government conducting regular assassinations by air. You know, what's going on here? Who is in control of it, and who can find out? And, you know, I think it's in the New York Times this morning that there is a review that Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor for Obama, has done on Mideast policy. They need to review this secret world and its power in their government, because you run into this rat's nest of concealment and lies time and time again, then and now.
I want to go back to just because those of us who have seen one commission after another, and I always had the highest regard for the Warren Commission because of the reputation of the people who were on it. But this thing was just one step away from being totally dysfunctional. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, just thinking of it, you know, Bob is describing this powerful secret government. And the members of the Warren Commission staff who really did this hard work, did the digging, they were young men who had no experience in government, most of whom had no experience in investigating. They had no idea what they were up against in the CIA and the FBI and these agencies that were determined to hide the full truth.
Well, I mean, and the commission members themselves, though, I mean, you know, here you had Earl Warren, who didn't want the job. You had Richard Russell, this distinguished senator from Georgia, who could not stand Earl Warren and told Lyndon Johnson that he wouldn't be on a commission that included Earl Warren. And Johnson said, well, I'm sorry, it's too late. I've already announced that you're on the commission and you're going to have to do it. But he showed up for very few meetings. Some of the other commission members seldom came when they met. You have Gerald Ford, who went on to become president, who early on called the FBI and said, listen, I'll be glad to be your guy and I'll keep you informed. I mean, these tales are just astonishing to me that how they ever got anything.
Well, you said that of the seven commissioners, really only two or three were ever involved in this investigation at all.
I think in part what we're talking about is the deep state. Even then, even 50 years ago, there were so many key agencies and they had so much going on and there was so much information coming in and there were humans who were mishandling it. And I mean some innocent people, such as I think the agent in Dallas, who was doing his best with Lee Harvey Oswald but didn't think he should be. Should be followed in the days before the assassination, but it was an honest judgment. But my point is, in governments, which are living organisms, there can be so much stimuli coming in that you lose it, but also people realize they're kind of powerful on mid-levels. And we see the same thing today when there's even more information coming in. There's opportunities for even more mischief, things that get lost, but also things that get bottlenecked. Bureaucracy can have a profound effect in being powerful, but can also lose a million threads.
Well, it's for a good purpose. We want to stop terrorism in this country and the world, and so all of this power has gone to the intelligence agencies. It's actually it's astounding what we spend on it, tens of billions of dollars. The problem is, and the people who do lots of this work do it in good faith, but it's on automatic pilot. Kill this person because we think he might be a terrorist, or, I mean, in some cases, they have these signature strikes. Well, it looks like terrorists. They're doing things like terrorists do, so let's kill him. Or let's get Chancellor Merkel's conversations on a cell phone. Now, what's interesting here is the technology that gives us the information about the terrorists is very similar, essentially, to the technology that allows us to get conversations of world leaders on cell phones. And somebody's got to look at this and see where it's going.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it is you get to a point where, what do you worry about? Secret government.
Let me ask both of you, tell me what your take is now on this whole rollout of Obamacare. Where does this go, Peggy?
Oh, it has been, I believe, a political disaster for the White House. It has made people in America nervous, anxious, and confused. Bottom line, it seems to me this whole thing should be delayed, but deep inside myself, I really think, look, they can probably get this tech end to work in a certain amount of time, but the internals of the law, the content of the law, is already causing problems. I wish we could stop the whole thing, go back to point one and say, let's try this again. I think it's not working.
It clearly isn't working, and you know, we'll see. They've put a lot of people on it, and they promised to deliver. But again, this connects to this theme of we've got an incredibly powerful government that gets on automatic pilot, and you have people with inexperience who don't know about nuts and bolts questions. People who don't go in and say, well, now is this going to work? Let's test it. We were talking earlier about the raid that killed Osama bin Laden. That was run by Leon Panetta, who was CIA director, who knew to make sure you checked all of the boxes, and they literally had a place where it was a compound that they reconstructed, and they practiced. And we didn't even practice Obamacare.
All right. Well, we have to end it there. Tom Johnson, thank you. You did some great reporting back there, back when you did honest work, being a real two-letter reporter.
Thank you, Mark.
And Phil Sheehan, congratulations. It's a remarkable book.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.